Allegations of Russian meddling in the US presidential election and the UK's referendum on EU membership, and data scandals involving Facebook and Cambridge Analytica have raised serious questions over the funding of election campaigns, the power of social media companies, and whether electoral law is fit for purpose. This podcast considers the fundamental challenges facing democracy in the digital era. Assessing the issues are Trevor Potter, Commissioner of the US Federal Election Commission from 1991 to 1995, Professor Tony Travers, a constitutional expert from the London School of Economics, and Sir John Holmes, Chairman of the UK Electoral Commission. We begin with Trevor Potter, former head of the FEC, on the impact of Russian meddling in the democratic process. He says the public in both the US and the UK should be made aware of who's funding campaigns.
Voters in both countries have a legitimate interest in knowing who is paying for the advertising attempting to sway their votes. We know that the Russians were interested in causing mischief in both countries, that the Russian foreign policy interests are in having a weaker and confused American political system and in having a weaker and more confused EU. If it is proven in the UK that Russia was helping fund an entity that was seeking a result which the Russians thought would weaken the EU and weaken Britain, voters should have known that. They should have known that the communications they were receiving were paid for by a foreign power that did not have the UK's best interests at heart. That is relevant information, just as it is here that apparently a foreign power was paying for advertising that was specifically designed to set Americans at each other's throats. And the classic example is paying for advertising to get people associated with Black Lives Matter movement to appear at a given location, and then a separate set of advertising designed to have their opponents appear at the same location for the evident purpose of creating a street brawl, which would have been, I think, bad for our democracy.
Potter goes on to discuss how, in the US, despite the ban on foreign spending in elections, foreign interests can run money through charities and NGOs for election purposes without disclosing it. He cites allegations that Russian funds were used by the National Rifle Association, clearly a significant issue given the current prominence of the gun control agenda.
So we have two different issues. One is if in our case in 2016, a Russian interest actually purchased ads on Facebook, which it appears they did, that should have been disclosed. However, if disclosure is required for the purchaser of ads, the risk here is that the foreign interest will just give the money to a U.S. entity or a U.K. entity, which will then spend it without disclosing the foreign involvement. You would just have an ad that said paid for by Americans for a better country, and without requiring disclosure of the donors to that entity, the public would be no wiser. I think the first step is disclosure, and that is different than a ban on foreign funding. What I would recommend is that if a charity is engaging in domestic election activity in the country in which it is registered and operating, then it should disclose its foreign funding. For instance, the NRA, the National Rifle Association, has had close relations with Russia and Russian interests now for a number of years, and the press reports that there is an ongoing investigation of whether Russian funds were used by the NRA in U.S. elections. That seems to me an important fact that should be disclosed. At the moment, there is no disclosure of the sources of NRA funding, even if it's foreign.
Assessing the Cambridge Analytica scandal, Tony Travers of the London School of Economics considers the sophisticated digital tools now available for campaigning.
The accusations made about Cambridge Analytica, there's two separate issues. One is, you know, were they somehow harvesting data in an inappropriate way? And second, is it wrong that whether the data, assuming the data are appropriately harvested, used, Is it appropriate that incredibly sophisticated campaigning tools are used to target particular messages at people with particular interests? I think the latter just has to be part of the new fair game of politics. I don't see how you can stop companies campaigns working out that, you know, in the way supermarkets do, what our preferences are, and then reacting to them. The big question then is, are they accessing data in order to understand preferences in a way that's inappropriate? So I think you have to draw a line between these two issues. But do I think companies like Cambridge Analytica will go on using data that they can in order to try to work out what all our preferences are and then target particular messages? I bet they will. Should it be stopped? Probably not. And in fact, no. Parties send different messages in a rather more, in a more sort of traditional way to different people in different places. This is just a very much more complicated way of doing, a very much more sophisticated and targeted way of doing that.
Travers also discusses the challenges of the law keeping pace with social media companies and suggests that regulation informed by public opinion is one way forward.
There's no doubt we need a certain form of regulation. I think it's more a matter of testing public opinion to see where the trade-offs lie. People still do have the right to opt out of using Facebook. It's not a legal requirement to use it. So I think that the regulation needs to be more about keeping abreast of what the companies are doing and also then informing the public and then testing public opinion and responding to it. I mean, the other issue buried in all of this is that it's quite hard for nation states to act against very large internet-based, you know, global multinationals.
Sir John Holmes, chairman of the UK Electoral Commission, considers the responsibilities facing social media companies and efforts in the UK to stop foreign interference in elections.
They have a lot of responsibility, and I think they have begun to realise how much responsibility they do have, because, of course, there's been a lot of criticism of the social media platforms, not just in the electoral context, but in all sorts of other contexts. In the campaigning case, what we've said, and what we're saying again now, is that we want them to take their responsibilities in this area seriously. We want them to insist that anybody, for example, who puts political advertising on their platforms should have to say who they are, where it comes from, and should have to conform to the laws in whatever country they're doing it. Now, for example, Facebook has said that it will, for the US midterm elections and the next presidential election, I think, insist that they will only take political advertising from organizations or individuals who are based in the US, in other words, trying to stop foreign interference in their elections. We want to see something similar being done by the social media platforms, Facebook and others, for the next UK elections. They have said also, for example, that they are proposing to put online archives of all political advertising that's been on their platforms, including historical material and including where it's come from. We think that will be a very good development. The UK government, for example, should look seriously at the option of regulating them more directly, as I say, if they're not delivering on the promises they've made and if they're not doing what we think is necessary to increase transparency for voters.
Holmes says electoral law must be kept up to date in light of digital campaigning, given the urgent risks facing democracy.
There's nothing wrong with digital campaigning, and there's nothing wrong with political parties and other campaigners using modern methods, including databases, to target voters with information. That's part of the political process. It's part of open campaigning. So in principle, it's a good thing. Now, it becomes a problem if people feel they don't know what's going on or they're not quite sure how their personal data is being used. Micro-targeting itself, which is the use of databases, again, is not illegal, if not necessarily undesirable. It's always been done, in a sense, by candidates and parties writing to individual voters with letters you can't see. So it's not different in nature. What's different, perhaps, is the speed with which you can do it, the cheapness with which you can do it, because it doesn't cost a lot of money to micro-target and to adapt your messaging to different groups. So again, what we're suggesting is that transparency is the best antiseptic, is the best disinfectant, I should say, in this area, so that, that there is a degree of visibility of this. And another part of this which we're recommending is that parties and campaigners, when they declare what they've spent, should have to spell out much more clearly what they've spent and what they've spent it on in the digital area. So the invoices from the social media platform should be clear about what exactly they've done, where they've done it and who they've done it to. And the spending returns from parties and campaigners should also make that clear. We're not saying that our system is broken now or that the democracy is under threat now. What we're saying is if the electoral law doesn't keep pace in terms of transparency with what's happening in the digital field, then there is a risk that voters are going to lose confidence. And that, you know, over time would begin to threaten the foundations of our democracy. So that's why we're calling on the governments in the UK to move fast.